traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hello, I'm Anne McElvoy, and you're listening to The Economist Asks. This week, our guest is a man who's been modestly described as the hottest thinker in the world. We're asking Nassim Nicholas Taleb, would having more at stake make our leaders better? Our elected representatives make decisions that shape the futures of millions, but often barely touch their own lives. After changing history, many of them are free to retire or head to the golf course.
America's interests in security and America's belief in liberty both lead in the same direction, to a free and peaceful Iraq.
The British people have voted to leave the European Union, and their will must be respected. And as such, I think the country requires fresh leadership to take it in this direction.
Illegal immigration, important. We're going to build the wall, okay? Believe me. We're going to build the wall.
Nassim Nicholas Taleb is a former trader, now Distinguished Professor of Risk Engineering at New York University, and author of many best-selling books about risk and randomness. In his new book, Skin in the Game, he argues that leaders, policymakers and thinkers have been led astray because they face no consequences when they get things wrong. So, Nassim, why is it so important to have skin in the game? And you're an academic. I guess you could say the whole academic world is predicated on understanding things without necessarily being directly involved.
Actually, it's quite a bit of a problem in academia because there are branches in academia that become echo chambers and completely divorced from reality when you don't have contact with the real world via skin in the game. But let me talk in general why it's a more thing. This has held, I'm not saying anything particularly new, I'm just revealing a property that has been holding since civilization started. We know from the Hammurabi Code that architects could not just put a structure and walk away from the consequences of the structure collapsing. Therefore, they could not hide risks in the foundations where risks is easiest to hide. When I was a trader, I knew how to play metrics because if the portfolio was not mine, I could make it look like having impeccable properties. And of course, the problem is that this comes with delayed blow-ups. They produce steady gains, and then once in a while you have a big loss, but you're far away when the big loss happens. Or at least you're not penalized because you don't pay for losses, so you collect a few bonuses. And politicians also play the same game. I mean, they leave office, they can load the system with debt, which causes usually delayed blow-ups, and leave office on an excellent note. Hey, look, I increased GDP, you have jobs. And then, of course, as the French say, after me, après moi le déluge.
Après moi le déluge. But hasn't that always been the case? Perhaps there's more at stake now in complex financial systems that lead up to something like the 2007-8 crash, although another huge one less than a century before. So what has really changed? I mean, why do we need more skin in the game now?
Okay, so, we need more skin in the game for several reasons. Modernity can only function if you have accountability. If you don't have that system, then someone can game it. And let me explain. Let's talk about military decision-making, okay? In the past, the very recent past, people who wanted war had to be involved in war. And just like bad drivers, if you're a reckless driver, you inflict risk on others, but you're first to die, there's a problem, you see? It's the same thing. So you have warmonger, a ratio of warmongers, but they took risks, so therefore that ratio could not rise enormously because of that constraint, you see? So what has happened is decision makers sitting in think tanks causing invasions, wars, and because they're not accountable, they cause regime change.
Let's unpack this. I mean, I been a political journalist for the best part of 20 years, and I've covered quite a lot of wars. I understand the sense and the frustration that drives what you say, and I recognise quite a lot of it as true. You can sponsor the big invasion, you can come up with the big policy innovation that turns out to cost millions or sometimes hundreds of millions, and it doesn't work, and you waltz off to your well-funded retirement. What would skin in the game look like for politicians? What would you do?
No, I would only build a structure. The point is not to answer a specific problem with a specific solution, but to look at what structure would allow the system to function properly. Okay, a system that functions properly is a system where restaurant owners are not judged by other restaurant owners, but judged by clients.
Well, they are, aren't they? I mean,
they are. So that's why systems. This is why we don't have
exactly. Online.
Exactly. Mm. So how the system works from.
There's better quality reviews, just to take that example, than something written by a food expert. I mean, on your theory, necessarily they are, but I'm not sure that they are.
No. But the system actually. Let me give you an irony. A friend of mine in the restaurant business showed me what happens when you have awards, and he says awards are given by other restaurateurs or professionals, but not by people who eat there. And typically, the award is granted, and then you have the 6 months later the event, the ceremony, and typically most restaurants are bust before the ceremony. You see, they get the awards. So just to tell you that you cannot have academics judge other academics without some contact with reality. So let's work backwards and look at what I call calibrated jobs. A calibrated job, a plumber cannot be a fraud, you see. You have, of course, statistically some incompetent plumbers, but typically a plumber is a good plumber. You can figure out if a plumber is a good plumber. But there are areas where the competence is harder to guess. And in the Black Swan, I have what I call the tableau of things where you have four experts. What has happened over time is these four experts are commanding more and more, you see.
Who's top of your hit list of experts?
Four experts.
Who's top of the sort of guilt list that you...
Person?
Yeah,
right.
No,
Thomas
types
Friedman,
of jobs.
For example. Yeah. Thomas Friedman, he doesn't know anything about anything, for example. And
he's
causes,
the New York Times writer and author. But that's,
for example, yeah. He caused the war of Iraq, the regime change, these guys. There's another fellow into regime change, or the neocons, for example.
Isn't that just your preference that you don't like or concluded that this kind of intervention doesn't work, and so you therefore tilt at the
expertise of someone who doesn't agree with you? No, because I have, from the beginning, installed a moral rule is that you don't talk about anything unless you have something to risk. Otherwise, you don't cause decision-making. So, for example, there's some kind of moral hygiene that I suggest people should be having, is that you don't have an action for which the consequences are borne by other people.
What do you have to risk?
Myself, I have practically, there's nothing. For example, I would never, being morally calibrated, like a butcher is morally calibrated, he eats his own meat, you see. So I myself, for example, would never tell you what to do with your money. I would tell you what I've done with mine. I would never manage your money without having more to lose by having my own money in the same position. For example, hedge fund managers, as much as I dislike bankers because there's a lot of rent seeking in banking, hedge fund managers typically have half their money in the fund. So they lose more in proportion to the net worth when they make a mistake than any of their clients. Now, let's look in the past. In the past, people who were prominent in society was the risk takers, not the pure. Very rarely in history have you had the non-risk takers command such a power. So what has happened is more and more GDP now is owned to government, and maybe 5 to 10 times what we had 100 years ago.
But then the skin in the game argument, yes, and the risk argument seem to pull against each other, don't they? Because if you want more risk taking in society to drive better outcomes, you also then have to allow that some of that risk is not going to come off.
No. The distribution risk-taking would be calibrated differently. There's one point that some people have raised against Skin in the Game, saying that, hey, we improved a lot by removing unlimited liability. But Skin in the Game doesn't mean unlimited liability. Skin in the Game means some kind of liability to act both as a deterrent and a filter.
But when I asked you about Iraq... a war, contentious war, where I suspect we would have probably approached it from, I'd been on the ground in wars and thought liberal intervention broadly a good idea. I don't think you do. You then said, well, you know, you don't like people who've, name a journalist, you know, who've argued for it. You don't like politicians who don't have skin in the game there. I still am wondering what the consequence would look like. It can't just be let's build systems that have skin in the game. There would have to be consequence. Could you give me an example of what that might look like in practice?
Practice, I'm saying, let's be more isolationist. Let people deal with their own business. You know,
so it's an anti-intervention.
Exactly, with the verbiage. Yeah. Yes, anti-interventionist approach comes out of it, except if someone aggresses you. Someone attacks you directly, you see. But or if you want to be an interventionist, then go settle in Iraq if the thing fails. It's morally wrong to be an interventionist while sitting in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., writing, thing that prod government into action without
How
paying
the
price. How
can it be morally wrong to simply take a different view, whether it's...
It's not a view. You're causing harm. It is morally wrong to cause harm without paying the consequence.
If you don't, you allow harm to occur, and then you can sit in your Washington suburb feeling smug. Why is that better, morally?
No, the point is, if you use that argument, hey, you know, let's save the world, we're saving the world, that argument is the typical argument used by charlatans. Oh, if we don't do that, look what would happen. This is, and actually, I cover quite a bit of what I call charlatanism in the book with virtue signaling, so you can lend yourself. But what has happened is a rotten system where decision makers are not the one who pay for the consequences. And this cannot continue in that shape for long because systems blow up when you don't have accountability.
Let's turn to some of your more amusing turns of phrase and some which are actually quite harsh. You talk about micro-bullshitters and macro-bullshitters, just so I know, just in case I might unfortunately fall into this category, you know, which is which and how...
Yes, okay.
How do we tell
it
the
is
micro...
It's practically impossible to micro-bullshit for a long time because you do it, in other words, it selects decisions that you have to make repeatedly.
Give me an example of micro-bullshit.
Micro-bullshitter is someone who's predicting the weather, okay? The micro-bullshitter cannot be operate for too long, someone randomizing, because very quickly there's something called law of large numbers would catch them. They're making a lot of small little predictions that will eventually lead to, you know, a track record that's wrong. But if you make a micro bullshit, you don't see the consequences. You don't see what happened. And I keep talking about the economy, like, say, Mr. Paul Krugman. He's a perfect macro bullshitter. He's practically wrong on everything, including his technical
That's
word.
Just your judgment on Paul Krugman, like it was earlier on Thomas Friedman.
Yes,
and might well be on
exactly,
me or half
yes.
of my colleagues on other matters.
Yes.
I'm not clear whether this is a convenient taxonomy for you to just
no,
say
it's
that
because,
you're right.
Because, I don't know, the point, no, the point is he was wrong on so many things.
Have you been
but
wrong
he continues,
on things as
well? Sorry?
But
I pay
wrong.
The price. Usually, I pay the price when I'm wrong. So if I'm wrong, I'd be bust now if I'm chronically wrong, all right? So and that's the idea of skin in the game.
But that's reductive to money and economic value. The only way we can
there are other
tell
steps.
That
then
you're
I
wrong
don't,
is because you'd lose money.
No, I will not open my mouth on things that don't, or if I do it, then I'm not following the principle of skin in the game. And I think that I've been okay in that sense, and being morally calibrated and not making pronouncement on things for which I don't pay a price.
You have become famous, if not notorious, for some rather public feuds with other academics. I'm thinking about Steven Pinker here. What is it specifically about Steven Pinker that gets your goat? He's pro-enlightenment, his new
That's,
book
okay.
says. Progress is a good thing. There seems to be something about the way that he argues that irks you. What is it?
No. It all started with his previous book on violence having the client. I sort of raised some severe statistical mistakes he made in a book, inaccuracies in interpreting statements by Richardson and
another academic.
Someone who did research. And I wrote academic papers on it, and he has not responded to academic papers I've written on it in statistical channels.
But wasn't that also because you called him a bullshitter and people sort of then don't, you know, they don't respond?
Well, I mean, the point is, I'm very confrontational when I attack someone, and I don't leave prisoners. So maybe when I started going after Pinker, he was turned off. But the point is, the Nobel Foundation invited me. I presented my case, everything. I wrote, so far, 2 scientific papers on the subject. He has written none, and presented it. And there was a bunch of academics, and he did not show up to.
And have you read his latest book?
I have not read his latest book.
Are you going to treat yourself?
on the previous book. But I'm used to, if someone bullshits me once, you know, say, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. So I don't know if I'm going to go to the second book, and I'm not commenting on the second book. But I will accept to say one thing, that science is not scientism.
Okay? What's the difference?
Huge. Scientism is, for example, let me give you the difference. Is it more scientific to do brain surgery for someone who has a headache, or to give them a glass of water and some tea and say, let's see what happens tomorrow? What's more scientific? Brain surgery?
On the whole.
Okay, scientism is to make brain surgery look more, appear more, more advanced. And so that's what I mean. And then the other one is, rationalism is not rational. Rationalism is using narrowly defined definition, and rational is something that is deeper.
A distrust of experts informs, I think, the way that you go with
things. Not all experts.
Not all. No, it's fair. Yes, enough, exactly. As you say, those who...
Class of experts back. Who are not checked by any rigorous metric.
Right, but then we would disagree on what that can be. And I'm thinking of a famous quote in the Brexit referendum when Michael Gove on the Leave side of the argument, politician here on the Leave side, said, we've had enough of experts. Well, the heavens kind of opened because everyone who considered themselves an expert believed themselves attacked. But at the same point, I think, he was trying to make was expertise is one thing, how people feel is another. The potential dangers of that are that you simply pick and choose, and you disregard warnings from experts, which might have been in your interest.
Let me tell you.
How do you know the difference?
Okay, let me tell you. I wrote The Black Swan as a tirade against pseudo-experts. And I will tell you that historically we have had a continuous movement against pseudo-experts, from the medical experts who were charlatans at the time. And if you look at it, people who call themselves experts and take position of expertise historically, outside the techne, there's techne and then there's something called episteme, right? The episteme. Outside the heuristic world of engineering and, the techne, there have been a lot of bullshitters, right? And in my later book, you see, these books are it's part of a collection called Incerto, which is investigation decision-making under opacity and uncertainty. And then there's a volume, a penultimate volume for this, was on the Soviet Harvard delusion. Okay, by showing that, again, your baker would be an expert at baking, but your microeconomist doesn't flow that an expert in one domain, that having proving expertise in one domain by some people can translate to another. And macroeconomists and political so-called scientists have not proven any expertise so far.
Do you think, for instance, we're sitting in front of a big board here in our studio, it says The Economist.
Yes.
So I suppose the clue's in the name. And you're sitting opposite a journalist. I get the feeling that journalists and economists come quite high up your list groups.
No, some. I mean, you have to realize that I write in newspapers and that I express opinions, and I'm writing and I write books, which is in the same profession as journalists, theoretically. But what I keep saying, I like journalism to be a check on power, not to become a tool of propaganda. And unfortunately, because when you don't have skin in the game, you tend to have monoculture, because there's some skin in some game that appears. Because of monoculture, I've noticed journalists to cluster to opinions, and they should not cluster. We've lost that diversity of opinions. This is where skin in the game plays a role, you see. Skin in the game is when you take risk for your opinion. And an opinion for me, the value of an opinion is higher when someone has taken risk for it.
So me risking my reputation by tangling with you, is that good enough?
No, why not?
You've
taken some risk, I would say, because you're taking some risk thanks to the internet and social media and thanks to a few developments in journalism. But you haven't taken a lot of risk, let's put it this way, because you would take some risk if you were to clip the interview to remove some of my answers, of course, but you would not do that.
That would be wrong. That would be wrong.
But you're not, you're morally calibrated today, because you're questioning me. I have skin in the game, and I defend my opinion. You're questioning me, and I like that, you see. But I would like you to do the same with Paul Krugman when he shows up, all right?
Paul Krugman, or indeed any other Krugmanites out there, do feel free to get in touch on Twitter and tell us what you think about that exchange. Nassim, I just have to ask, if your book gets everything wrong or a large part of things wrong? Or would you be able to see the difference? Isn't there a problem with the skin in the game argument, is that we have to sort of agree what we think the parameters of being wrong and right
yes.
are?
I mean,
and
I have,
how would you know?
Okay, I kept looking for wrong extensions of my idea. Thanks to social media, where I put my idea on social media, and my enemies are first to react, my friends are second to react, and I discover mistakes in my own reasoning and I correct them. So I've been discovering mistakes and correcting them. And one of them, for example, is with jurors. Should jurors have skin in the game? Of course not. But then what's the difference? Jurors are anonymous and they do it once and there's no monoculture. Whereas a journalist they have monoculture and they're not anonymous, except at The Economist, of course.
Well, there you go. The best of all possible worlds. Can we agree on that?
Conditional on having your editor calibrated, right? Because at the end, she's selecting among the articles.
I'm off to calibrate my editor. Nassim Taleb, thank you very much for joining us with your skin in the game. Well, what do you think? Should personal stakes be higher for those charged with deciding our futures? How so? Do get in touch via email radio@economist.com and on Twitter @economistradio. We'll be talking to the thinker Steven Pinker in an upcoming Economist Asks. In response to Taleb's claims in this interview, Steven Pinker has sent us a blog post from September last year and also a presentation by his collaborator Michael Spargat, which he says reply to Taleb's criticisms. We'll hear from Steven Pinker on this show soon. In London, this is The Economist.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.